Now, since it's only Tuesday, and I usually don't prepare my drushes till like 3 minutes before Shkia Friday afternoon, when I realize there is no other chance of procrastinating, this is a very rough draft, first shot at what I'm going to speak about this Shabbos. Okay? So if you have any major questions that destroy the whole thing, you're going to cause me a lot of problems of having to do this over. So if you can find anything that you can add to it or strengthen it, I'd be happy. Then you'll be doing my dirty work, and I will be very happy. Okay, in any case, again, this discussion is really irrelevant for this year, because the Haftorah for this Shabbos is not the Haftorah of Seder Bamidbar, but rather the special Haftorah of Machar Chodesh, as it says on the wall over here. Whenever Rosh Chodesh falls on Sunday, the Haftorah that we read on the Shabbos before, which is Erev Rosh Chodesh, is the Haftorah of Machar Chodesh. However, we already discussed that Haftorah because it happened before this year. Right? Machar Chodesh already, I think, was twice this year. Once was Parshas Bereishis. And right away in the beginning of this year, we discussed the meaning of the Haftorah of Machar Chodesh. Okay. If you don't remember, it's on a tape somewhere. In any case, so I'm not going to discuss that again, and usually Machar Chodesh has no connection to the Seder. It just happens to be that that week falls out to be Erev Rosh Chodesh. It could be any Seder. But we usually find some connection anyway, since nothing is kind of coincidental. But that's not what I'm going to speak about. I want to speak about the Haftorah we would have read had it not been Machar Chodesh. Okay, so this is good for other years. It's irrelevant for this year, but I really want to connect the Parsha with the Haftorah, and that is still a relevant thing, because the Sedra, the regular Haftorah, we have to find out what the connection is, even though we're not going to be reading it. So, again, there's a simple connection, and then there's a much deeper connection. What is the simple connection? The Haftorah starts out, the Hoya Mispar B'nei Yisrael Kechol Hayam, the number of the Jewish people will be like the sand at the seaside, Asher lo yizmad, which will not be measured, velo yisafer, and can't be counted. Okay, that is the beginning of the Haftorah. It speaks about counting the Jewish people, that we will be beyond countable numbers, like the grains of sand at the seashore. What's the connection to the Sedra? What does the Sedra deal with almost predominantly? The counting of the Jewish people in the desert. Right, that we went into the desert and we were counted, and when we came out of the desert, in the end of Bamidbar, there's another census, another counting. And that's why the book of Bamidbar is called Chumash HaPikudim. It's the Chumash of Countings, because it records all the incidents that happened in the 40 years in the desert between the first census when we entered the desert and the second census when we left the desert. Okay. So, and here the Haftorah speaks about Mispar B'nai Yisrael, the number of the Jewish people. It fits very nice with numbers, which is Sefer Bamidbar, starting with Sedra Bamidbar. Okay, there's another connection, though, that aside from numbers, which is the thematic name of this of the book, Chumash HaPikudim, what is the regular name of the book? Bamidbar, right? Desert. That's also mentioned in the Haftorah. The Haftorah says like this, Lachain, Hinei anochi mefateha v'holachtiha hamidbar v'dibarti aliba. God says that after all the calamities befall us in Golus, right, we go into exile and we have all these terrible calamities, so God will bring us back into the desert, and the Jewish people will be redeemed from the desert. It doesn't necessarily mean literally that we're going to go into the Sinai desert, but conceptually we'll see in a second. Now, we find that Medrash in Medrash HaGavra in Parshas Chukah says Ma Goel Rishon Hotziyam LeMidbar, just like the first Redeemer took us into the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu, came Goel Achron, so to Mashiach V'Olachtiyah LeMidbar. There'll be a stage where Mashiach comes that will take us into the desert. The final redemption will also happen. There'll be a stage where we'll be going into the desert before we occupy Eretz Yisrael. So that's another connection. It's connected both to the thematic name of the book, which is starting, Bamidbar, which is Chumash HaPikudim, counting. So the beginning of the Haftorah speaks about counting. And it also has the concept of what's it called, of the desert, which is the other name, Bamidbar, that also is mentioned in the Haftorah. So the first Sedra in Sefer Bamidbar, which is called Bamidbar, right, has a connection to the Haftorah, both as Bamidbar and both as a census, as counting. But the only thing is, the Sedra speaks about counting the Jewish people and getting a finite number to them. And the Haftorah says that we'll be without counting, without any number. And Chazal say, when we do God's will, then we have no number. We're beyond counting. And when we don't do God's will, then we can be counted. So that would seem to imply that in the desert, we weren't doing God's will because we were counted. But that's really not true, because at that point, we had done tshuva, we repented for the sin of the golden calf, we had the Mishkan, right? So we were counted, not because we weren't doing God's will, we were doing God's will. So I want to explain what it means is the following. First of all, what does it mean that we would be like the grains of sand at the seashore, which have no, they can't be measured and can't be counted? Of course they can be. And theoretically, they have a number. Right? They're finite. They're not infinite. So what does it mean they can't be counted? Or as it said by Yaakov Avinu, V'hoya zaracha techol hayam, asher lo yisafer meirov. Your children will be like the grains of sand at the seashore, which can't be counted because there's so many. But they can be counted. I mean, it's just difficult to count them, and maybe hard to do it, right, by any one person. But lemaisa, it is possible to count them. Now, it's something that is within the realm of possibility. It's not impossible. So what does that mean? Asher lo yisafer meirov. So thinking, the idea is the following. That the importance of the seashore is not determined by how many grains of sand there are. Now, if there's another 10 grains of sand, it's a more, secure seashore than if there's 10 grains of sand left. How many grains of sand there are is irrelevant to the seashore. What makes the seashore important? The fact that those grains of sand are compact together, and they form a barrier that holds the sea back. And in fact, there's a beautiful medrash, the beginning of the Torah, that explains how the sea does that. The medrash says that when God created the seashore, so the grains of sand looked up, and they saw that a wave was coming. And they went to the angel that is their guardian angel and said, we're going to be destroyed. This wave is coming with tremendous force. We're just little grains of sand. There's nothing that we can do to protect ourselves. We're going to be completely washed away. So the angel said, don't worry. When the time comes, you'll know what to do. The angel said, we don't know what to do. There's no way that we can face this wave. And the wave got closer and closer and closer. And they got more and more scared. Finally, they all huddled together and held on to each other, right, and united, right, in fear of the wave. And then the wave, because they were all compact and close together and united, the wave hit the shore and receded. So that was the lesson. The lesson was that each grain of sand may be nothing compared to the wave. But if they unite together and create a compact seashore, then they create a barrier against the sea. Yeah? It's a kochavim, right?
Wasn't that supposed to be like a
choice? You can be the Afar Haaretz, you can be the Shechavan. Right, okay, but that's Afar Haaretz, that's not Kol Hayam. There's a difference between dust and, the sand, the sea sand, there's three things that we're compared to. We're compared to stars, to dust, and to the sand at the seashore. The stars have one understanding. They represent one thing. The dust is that even though we're stepped on, right, we still raise above everybody else in the end, right? So if we choose to fulfill our purpose in the wrong way, we'll be stepped on by the nations. But in the end, the dust is raised above the people who step on it. And the seashore is this idea. the idea, which we didn't get to yet, really, but the grains of sand at the seashore represent the unity of the Jewish people and the function of the Jewish people. So therefore, the sand at the seashore is not counted because it's impossible. It's not counted because it's irrelevant. It's not, Asher lo yisafer merov means it won't be counted by number, physical number, because that's not the function of a seashore, just to have a lot of grains of sand, and that makes the difference. The difference is how they function. If the seashore is this compact and they're united, right, its function is important. Therefore, it's not the physical number that makes a difference, it's the function that makes the difference, and that's not something you can count. That's what it means. It's something that transcends number, because the number is not the ikar. And therefore, the same thing with what's it called, and what does the seashore do? Now let's take it a step further. When God created the world, so the world was totally liquid, all water. And he said, let the waters divide and make dry land. The dry land is the place that man can exist. Without dry land, man can't exist. So when God created dry land, he was preparing the way for human beings, for there to be human beings in this world. And therefore, the seashore provides the protection, the ongoing protection for human beings to be able to exist. Because if the seas would flood the world, there couldn't be any human life. So the fact that human beings can continue to exist in this world is to the credit of the seashore that forms a barrier against the sea and preserves the dry land. Okay, the Jewish people are like that. We are the preservation, those who preserve mankind in this world. The world was created for the sake of the Jewish people. So the preservation of mankind is because of us. Because we do what we're supposed to do, we give the world purpose. And because the world has purpose, people can exist here. So we're like the seashore that holds back the waters of the flood. Because when people don't do what they're supposed to do, right, then they are destroyed. How does God destroy them? He takes the, what's it called, the ground from underneath their feet and brings a flood. When God wanted to destroy the entire world, so he flooded the world. So if there's something that holds back the seas from flooding the world, it's representative of the task of the Jewish people who are what's it called, the ones who give protection and preservation to the world. Okay. And therefore, when it says that the seashore isn't counted, merov, because of its many components, it doesn't mean it can't be counted, but it means it's not counted because it's, it's numerous. It's counted for its function. Now, if that's the case, right, that's what it says by Klal Yisrael too. Lo mirubchem choshek Hashem bachem. God didn't care for you because of your numbers. Not dafka that we are few. We could be more. Because it says, ki atam ha-ma'at mikol amim. You are the fewest of all the nations. That's not necessarily the case. I mean, there are nations that are fewer than the Jewish people. So the Chazal say, it doesn't mean you're the fewest in number. Atam ha-ma'at means you are the people who are the most humble. When I give you greatness, you don't take it to heart and make yourselves great. You give me thanks and you make yourselves small. And therefore, it's not because you're numerous in quantity, but it's because of your echos, because of your quality, because of what your task, what your mission is. What your character is, that makes you important. Not your numbers. You may have a lot of numbers, but that's not the main thing. That's irrelevant. I don't care how many Jews there are. It's what kind of Jews there are. Atem ha-ma'at mikol ha'amim. And therefore, when we do God's will, so we are measured in quality. And that has no limitations. Because in one second I'll tell you what that quality represents. Okay? What the quality of the Jewish people in our mission. But when we don't do God's will, then you can't measure us according to our mission and quality because we don't have it. So then we're counted according to our numbers. And then, any number is finite. So it can be counted. But when you're counting spiritual things, they don't have a number. They're infinite. In the desert, Jews weren't counted. Because we learn from this sentence another halacha. Asher lo yisafer means you're not allowed to count Jews. So how do they make a census in the desert? The answer is they didn't count us. They counted our names. Name represents what you are, your essence. Or they counted the half shekel that we gave, which shows the worth of the Jewish people. What did that half shekel go to buy? Sacrifices. Public sacrifices. That's how you count the Jew. What is his potential in coming close to God? So you count that half shekel. You're not counting him. You're counting his worth. You're counting him lishmosam, leveisavosam. You're counting him according to his forefathers. Where does he come from? Right? What's his roots? That's what you're counting. You're counting him with his name. What's it called? And his forefathers. Name represents his function, his essence. Forefathers represents his past. Right? You count him with what he's going to do in the future, the sacrifices. Right? All this is part of what the Jewish people are, and those things are infinite. Those things you can't put a number on. They're open-ended. So that's what it means. When you count Jews, when they do God's will, you're counting their quality. Quality is not something finite. When they're not doing God's will, you're counting their quantity. That's finite. So Jews can be counted when they don't do God's will. They can't be counted when they do God's will. So the census in the desert was when we were doing God's will, and we weren't counted as bodies. We were counted by name, by parents, by by what our tafkid, what our mission is, karbanos, the sacrifices, worth, quality, not quantity. Now, one more point that why this is the case, why this is so infinite, because another quality that Jews have is like this, the sand, the sea sand, is its mission, its purpose. That's what makes it important. That's how you measure it, not in miles or inches or number, but in function, right? But there's also another thing we said, this idea of achdus, how much that they are united. The unity between them gives them their function. The same thing with the Jewish people. The importance is that I'm not just an individual, but I'm an individual as part of a cloud, part of a community. In addition to that, there's what's it called, we say in Yalav Yavo, I think this also brings out this idea. It says, Yalav Yavo Zichroneinu Tiktonei, remember our remembrances. Then we say the Zichron of Hoseinu, the remembrance of our forefathers. The Zichron Mashiach Ben David Avdecha, and the remembrance of Mashiach. The Zichron Yerushalayim Yerkadshecha. The Zichron Kol Amcha Beis Yisrael Lefanecha. What does that mean? Right? Want God to remember us, remember Mashiach, remember our Avos. I was thinking, no, it's all our remembrances. But our remembrances are not just what we do personally, but every person has a connection to the forefathers. There's part of them in us. So don't only remember what we do as individuals, remember what we are and what is part of us from our forefathers, from the past. Also, remember us, what we have for the future. In each and every one of us is a spark of what would be for Mashiach. Every Jew has in him the potential of the future. That's Mashiach. Zikra Mashiach is not to remember Mashiach. It's to remember Mashiach that's in us. We have a share in the future. So remember how we function in developing that share in the future. So don't only remember what we do on the present. Remember what we do, which has a connection, connects us to the past. Remember what we do that connects us to the future. Remember what we do that connects us to all time, equally as Yerushalayim. Zichron Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is past, present, and future. It exists at all times, Yerushalayim. And then there's another thing. It's not only us, past, present, and future, but it's us connected to the entire Jewish people. Zichron Kol Amcha Beis Yisrael. We're not just individuals. We're part of the cloud. And the cloud is past, present, and future. So that's the case. Every Jew is not one person. He's counted as an individual who is a continuation from Avraham Avinu. So that gives him a lot more numbers, right? And it's a compound thing. Remember, we once spoke about this idea of the cumulative effect. It's not just every one generation, but it accumulates. The first generation, the second one is already two, and then the third one is a combination of all three, and everything accumulates one on the other. It's a geometric progression. So every Jew is connected to the past, and he's part of that past. And then every Jew is connected to the future. He's part of the future. Every Jew is connected to all times together. He's connected to all Jews of all times together. So then the number has no, there's no finite number. It's things that are beyond, it's something that is infinite. Because it's, there's so many different connections that no Jew is just one. He is millions, billions, infinite. Because it's all, there's no end to it. So that's the, that's also the idea. Now, let's connect that to the Midbar, okay? The Midbar, okay, is a place where there are no barriers, borders, physical borders. The Midbar is an open place, and there's nothing that limits a person in the Midbar. In fact, I was thinking, I don't know if this is true, but maybe, that the word Midbar comes from the words midavar, means out of anything, right? Midavar, it's not anything, there's nothing there. Right? Things limit people. No matter what you have, you're limited by your things. The Maharal says that a poor person is free. Now that seems on the surface very hard to understand, because usually poor people are not free, they're miserable. Rich people are free, they can do whatever they want. But this idea, right, I understood in Miami, the Nemtsos I think can relate to this because you're going to know who I'm talking about. There were two guys, we used to call them Ernie and Bert, but two beggars that used to come to Miami for the entire winter, okay? They used to, what's it called, hang around our shul a lot, and they were a team. They used to come all the whole winter, and then when it started getting warm again in New York, they would go back to New York, and that's where they came from. They were Jewish. What?
They came from Israel.
No, they came from New York. They were the New Yorkers. There was that tall guy, and they hung around Saul Kautzman, Oliver Shalom a lot. Okay, now you know what I'm talking about. In any case, it always amazed me. Imagine a businessman taking off the entire winter to come to Miami. He couldn't do it. He has this responsibility, that responsibility. He has his house, he has his family. These guys had no family. They had no house. They had no, they all had to do was go beg enough for a Greyhound bus ticket. Came to Miami, went from place to place getting meals and begging their way. Could stay the whole winter in Miami without any problems and go back to New York. Could you think of anybody freer than that? Right, who had a what's it called, a free winter in Miami, basically, just begging their way through. Right, no businessman can do that. He's limited by his property, by his responsibilities. But a poor person has no responsibilities, no property to limit him. He can do whatever he wants. So that's what the Maharal means. Therefore, to a certain degree, being poor is being free. Mar b'nechosim, mar b'daiga. You have more property, more things, things limit you. So the Midbar is a place, Midavar, it's a place out of things. There's no things there. It's just open. There's no barriers. So the barrier is only what you make for yourself. So if you, in the Midbar, create barriers that are spiritual barriers, then you're unlimited. That's why God took us out of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is borders, barriers. Netzar. Netzar means a, what's it called? A narrow border, right? A limitation. So he took us out of Mitzrayim, and where did he take us? Right into the Midbar, the opposite of Mitzrayim. There are no borders. There's nothing there that could possibly limit you. So now you have the ability to make yourself unlimited if you limit yourself in spiritual things. So what did they do when they came into the Midbar? They made their own barriers, but spiritual barriers. First barrier they made is how they're going to live and position themselves in the desert around the Mishkan. They made their place around the Mishkan. And around the Mishkan, each one had their degel, had their flag, like their place. So their limitations were spiritual limitations. Before that, they were around Har Sinai. They limited themselves, Hagbula, the Gvul, the, what's it called, the borders that they made were around Har Sinai. The borders were the Degolim. Right? Then they had, what's it called, they counted. What did they count? Days towards the giving of the Torah. Right? Sfira. So all of the countings, all the limitations, all the numbers were not dependent on things. They were dependent on ideas, on spiritual things, and therefore they were unlimited. So the best place to get out of Mitzrayim is to go into the Midbar. Same thing after Golus. Golus limited us tremendously. We were hemmed in by the nations of the world, physically, spiritually. So before we can come back to Eretz Yisrael and be in an Eretz Yisrael that doesn't limit us physically, but gives us the ability to limit ourselves only spiritually, but not be limited physically. Eretz Yisrael is an unlimited land. Eretz Tovo Lechov, it's broad land. In fact, it expands according to the Jewish people. It doesn't have any borders, no limitations. It's Eretz Svi. It's called the land of the deer. Just like a deer, its skin stretches with it as it grows. Right? So too, what's it called? Eretz Yisrael stretches. The more Jews, Eretz Yisrael has more land. It gets bigger and bigger. It expands. It's not limiting, right? Okay. He's, don't have to tell the Sharon. He's not the one who makes these decisions. Right? It's all despite him. In any case, so that is where we had to go after Mitzrayim, after being limited in number, in quantity, right, in physical ways, we had to get out of that, go into the Midbar, where there's no limitations, and make our own limitations of spiritual things, and that'll be the same way that it'll be in the future. And that's why the Sedra of Bamidbar comes to separate between the Klolos that were in last week's Sedra and the beginning of a new year, because we're judged on the fruit of the tree on Shavuos, so it's like a new year. Similar to what happens by Rosh Hashanah, the week before Rosh Hashanah we always lay Nitzavim or Nitzavim Vayelech in order to make 1 week separation between the Brachos and Klolos of Kisavo and the new year. Tich Lashana V'Kiloset. Let the curses stop. Have 1 week separating the curses from the new year. So think over here, we separate the curses of the Chukoset from the new year. What do we separate it with? In Rosh Hashanah with Nitzavim, Nitzavim speaks about the function of the Jewish people. Each one's mission. Atem Nitzavim Hayom, you all are standing together, united. The heads and the women and the men, everybody has their mission. You're being counted not according to your quantity, but according to your quality. And if that's the case, when does klala come? What is klala? The word klala means cow. It's contracting. It makes things smaller. Bracha means to increase. If you have a number, you can count something, weigh it. That's why bracha does not have an effect on things that are measured, weighed, counted. Once you quantify them, there's no more place for bracha. Bracha means an increase. Klala is where things are quantified down, downsized. So, you know when the klalas can be? When we're not united, when we don't fulfill our purpose, we're not counted by our mission, we're counted by our bodies. Then we're small. We're susceptible to curse. But if you separate with Atta Nitzavim, or now we separate with Bamidbar, we go out in the Midbar, we take away all those things that quantify us physically. We take away all the things that make us small and that make us susceptible to klala. And we go into the Midbar where there is no boundaries. And we make our own boundaries, the boundaries of spiritual boundaries, like it speaks about. We make ourselves with the Degolim, and we're united around the Mishkan, and we unite ourselves together, each person fulfilling his mission amongst Christ, like the sand at the sea. Then we're, what's it called, we are not susceptible anymore to curse. And that's the, fine. Okay, and that has a connection also to Machar Chodesh. Because Machar Chodesh, we once explained, is the darkest time of the month. It's the time, Erev Rosh Chodesh, when there's no moon at all. The moon disappears. And that is when we know it's going to come back. We know there's going to be a Hischadshus. So it's a hint that the Jewish people, when it comes to physical things, we are sometimes like the moon, get very, very small. We wane. But there's always hope because we are not physical beings. We're like the light of the moon, and the light always comes back. So no matter what we are physically, that's not what we are. That's not how we're counted. That's not how we are. Just like the seashore. The physical grains of sand is not what makes a seashore important. It's its function that makes it important, and that's why we are like the sand of the sea. Okay. I have an idea now what I'm going to say on Shabbos, but much more than I did before I came here. And that way Achrimos and Kedoshim go together. This is the preparation, this is the actual holiness. Now, why are we called Kushim? So the Medrash says, Ma Kushi Mishune the Oro, Af Yisrael Mishune Mimaseh Mikolomos. Just like a Kushi, a Shvarza, is different, stands out in a crowd of whites, so too the Jewish people stand out amongst the nations of the world. The Malbim says, what it means is, just like a Shvarza can't assimilate amongst the white population, because he stands out like a sore thumb. He can't change his skin, right? The Jew also stands out amongst the nations of the world like a sore thumb. He can't assimilate because he has a different lifestyle. Jews have to be holy, and therefore we are a nation that dwells apart. We are as different from the nations of the world as a Schwarz is different than a white person. And we can't assimilate. And therefore, the concept of Kedoshim Tiyu is not only a command, you should be holy, but it's a record of fact. You are holy people. You can't avoid that. You can't avoid and run away from your role and mission of being God's people, of being holy people, of being representatives of God. Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh. And therefore, the whole idea of Golus, when we don't live up to what we're supposed to be, and we want to act like the Goyim, so God says, fine, you want to act like the Goyim? I'm going to throw you into Golus and get a good picture of what they are. And maybe you'll see you don't want to act like them. Go around, see all the Goyim. Take a little tour of the world for the last 2,000 years. You see any of them that you really want to be like? That's what you want to be? And you'll see you're different than them. You're not the same as them. So Golus itself reminds us that we have to be different. And also, the whole purpose of Golus is to show that there's something within the Jewish people that never can be destroyed. There's a holiness that exists within us, and even if externally we don't look like that, internally we're still like that. There's another medrash that says, Shchora ani v'nava, I'm black, but I'm beautiful. Meaning that even on the outside I may look black, but on the inside I'm still beautiful. And Rabbi Shamshon Feuerl Hirsch says that's not exactly black is beautiful, but it's almost the antithesis. The blackness is not so beautiful, but it's the inside that's beautiful. Rabbi Shamshon Feuerl Hirsch says that is the symbolism of the avoda of Yom Kippur. What do we do on Yom Kippur? We take a goat and we throw it off a cliff. Take another goat and we slaughter it and we bring its blood into the Holy of Holies. What's the symbolism, says the Maral? The goat represents Yetzer Hara, the Satan, is represented by a goat. Okay? Jewish people may look on the outside like a goat, but that you can get rid of, throw it off the cliff. But if you look deep enough inside, you'll find blood. The blood of a goat is the most similar blood to the blood of a human being. And that blood is fit to go into the Holy of Holies. The Jew on the outside may look like a goat, but if you delve far enough inside, you'll find blood of a human being that's fit to go into the Holy of Holies. That's a Jew. A Jew can become tainted on the outside, but his inside, his neshama, remains pure and holy. And the whole idea of Golus is to take away the externals and separate the evildoers and bring back that essence of the Jewish people back to Eretz Israel. That's what Golus is all about. Now, second idea. Another idea of preparation for holiness. What is holiness? Rashi says, it said in Parsha Shemini, says it again in the end of this week's Sedra, you should distinguish between the kosher animal and the non-kosher animal. So Rashi says, it doesn't mean you have to distinguish between a camel and a cow. That anybody can distinguish. You know what it means? If you slaughter a kosher animal, halfway exactly, the esophagus and the trachea, exactly half, it's treif. It's not kosher. If you do a little bit more than half, then it's kosher. You have to be able to make that fine distinction between half and a little bit more than half. One is non-kosher, the other one's kosher. Holiness is making fine distinctions. Fine distinctions is what, because the same thing, if done the improper way, is treif, unholy, profane, abominable, and done the right way is holiness. There's a very fine line between purity and impurity. That's why we're counting the Omer. We were on the 49th level of impurity. And we had to get to the 49th level of purity by Shavuos. Now, if impurity is minus 49, and you want to get to plus 49, how many stages do you need? From minus 49 to plus 49. How much? 98, right? So why do we only have 49 days of Sfira? If we had to go from minus 49 to plus 49, we should need 98 days of Sfira. The answer is that it's not like a thermometer from minus 49 to plus 49. Holiness and impurity, purity and impurity, are like two parallel ladders. And the difference between them is a hair's breadth. And you can do on this level what is impure, and if you do it the right way, it becomes pure. The 49th level of purity is parallel to the 40, minus 49. They go together. And if you fall from this, you go to this. One side to the other. It's just 49 steps. But you have to be able to distinguish which is the pure ladder, which is the impure, because they're very parallel. Let me give you an example. Now let's go back to Achrimos and see that all the themes of Achrimos also represent this idea. They're in this way also a preparation for holiness by showing that the same action, when done properly, is holy, and when done improperly is the antithesis. What's the first theme? Yom Kippur. What's Yom Kippur? The Kohen Gadol goes into the Holy of Holies, effects atonement, brings God's presence to the Jewish people. Great. But Nadav and Avihu did the same thing. They also went into the Holy of Holies and brought incense, and what did that lead them to? Death. Why? Wrong time, wrong place, wrong people. Same action at the wrong time, the wrong place, the wrong people brings death, when by the right person at the right time in the right way brings atonement for sins. Same action, going into the Holy of Holies with incense. Same thing, and the Torah tells you. Achrei Moshe Ben Aaron. Aaron, don't go in all the time. The right way, proper time, proper person, holiness. Wrong time, wrong people, same thing, death. Next thing, bringing sacrifices. You bring it to the temple, something that brings you closer to God. You bring it the wrong place, you take that same sacrifice and sacrifice to God in your backyard, it's kares. You get cut off. It's death. Same action, sacrificing a sacrifice to God. The right place is holiness. The wrong place is death. Next parasha, the prohibition of eating blood and forbidden fats. That same blood, when sprinkled on the altar, brings you closer to God. The same fats, when burnt on the altar, bring you closer to God. But if you eat them, then you get kares, you get to death. It's the same thing that can be an object of closeness to God. If you do the wrong thing with it, becomes an object that totally separates you from God. Arayas, sexual things. The biggest mitzvah, one of the biggest mitzvahs is Purim. Getting married and having children. That keeps the world going. That is mitzvah gedola. But with the wrong time, the wrong people, the wrong place, it's tumah. It's impurity. It's kares. It's death. It's the same, all the themes in Achrimos follow the same thing. It gives me three or four different things that if you do them right, they're holy, and if you do them wrong, they're the antithesis. That's why it says, Kibnei Kushiyim. It doesn't say Kushim, just Tam plural. Kushiyim is like a double plural, because it represents these two ideas. The Kushi can be a symbol of good. It says Moshe married Isha Kushis. So Chazal say, just like a Kushi is totally black, she was totally righteous, totally beautiful. It says the same thing by Shaul HaMelech is called Kush, because just like a black man is different in his skin, he was different in his good deeds. So there are many places, Shaul HaMelech. No, he's also called Kush in by David HaMelech and Taylor. What? No, he was called Kush, not only Ben Kish. He's called Kush with a chaf, with a chaf. It's a place where he's referred to as Kush. In any case, so there are Midrashim that interpret the Kush as good, as a positive symbol. And there's a another idea of Cush, why Cush is a good symbol, is that he's a symbol of slavery. And we're supposed to be God's slaves. But you could be slaves to people and your passions too. And then there are Midrashim that say that Cush, when the Jewish people sin, they're compared to Cushim. That they're black. Black being a negative thing. So where's no? So that's the idea. Cushim. You are like Cushim. You can be the ultimate good. You can be the ultimate bad. It depends if you are discerning. The same people, the same things. Depends how you do them. It depends how discerning you are. And you can be a slave to your passions. You can be a slave to God. Good, bad, same slavery. Depends who you're a slave to. In any case, somebody asked me, but it also says plishtiim. I'm saying kushiim is there because it wants to distinguish that you can be a kushi this way or this way. You're like both meanings. You choose which meaning you want. Why does it say plishtim? So I looked it up. It says that there's a question which plishtim that God sent into exile is represented over here. There were plishtim way back in the beginning of the world who exiled other people of Canaan and took over their place, the original plishtim. So that's one interpretation. Another interpretation is that the plishtim themselves will be exiled by other people in the future. Not our future, but the future from Amos. So since there's a difference of opinion, the Navi said it in a way that you could have both pshatim. Divrei plishtim. You are like plishtim, both the plishtim of the past and the plishtim of the future too. So you have both meanings. And whenever we find something that could have two different meanings, it has that construction. Ivriim we find. Why? Because Ivri can mean people who come from Aver, and also can mean people who are on one side of the world and everybody else is on the other side. So in order to intimate both meanings, it says Ivriim and not just Ivrim. Yehudiim in Megillus Esther. Why? Because Yehudi can mean someone who comes from Yehuda. It can mean somebody who admits and believes in God and denies idolatry. It's called a Yehudi. In order to give it both meanings, the construction is Yehudiim, plural, so it's both kind of Yehudim. The regular meaning and the Midrashic meaning. So same thing over here. In any case, that is the deeper connection, I think, between the Haftorah of Halok Yivnei Kushiim, which represents the idea of preparation for holiness, which is the theme of the Parsha of Achrimos, the preparation for Parshas Kedoshim of holiness.